and welcome to The Cynic Weekly. I'm your host, Christopher Gallagher. It's Thursday, the 11th of April. It's 7 p.m. and we're going to talk about Celtic. I am joined this week by Stuart Dugan. Hello, Stuart. How are you, friend?
I'm good, Christopher. How are you?
I'm good also. It's good to see you.
Great.
Great. We're also joined by Alan Edgar. Hello, Alan. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm also good, mate. I'm ready to go for Saturday, so hopefully this will pass a nice wee hour.
Lovely stuff. We're obviously going to talk about the derby because it was such a huge part of our week and such a huge part of the season. We put out a survey that covered a lot of kind of points. We wanted to get the perspective of, you know, a selection of the support. So we'll go through that in a couple of minutes, and obviously we'll touch then into the St Mirren game, which is huge on Saturday as well. But I just want to, the opening news is just about the Dundee game being postponed again, which means that Rangers will play a game post-split. April the 17th, they'll play this game at Dens Park if it stops raining. But what it does do is it kind of means that if we win on Saturday, there's even more daylight, and it does put a little bit more pressure on them. Alan, what's your kind of thoughts on just the postponement and just, you know, how hilarious it was?
Yeah, it's a bit bizarre. I would rather the game had been played either first time or last night. I'd kind of like all things to be level, to be honest. I'm not sure knocking this game back any further really puts any more pressure. I think it's more because I'm the standard of Dundee, to be honest. I have very, very little hope that they will be able to get a positive result. A muddy pitch would be a nice leveller, however, so I would have been keen for the game to be on. I think, to be honest, the thing that looks daft now is not playing it last midweek. I think it looks pretty foolish. When you've got a free week, you've got a pitch that has a problem, you want to have as much opportunity as possible to play on it. I don't know what it was like last Wednesday night, but they were able to play a game on it on Saturday. So I think it's a wee bit, I think it's a bit odd that you didn't take the earliest opportunity to play it. I wonder if that was a league decision, whether one of the clubs felt that they had to prepare for a big game and maybe said, nah, don't fancy it, we'll play it after. I have no idea, just speculation, but I don't really hold it great hope for Dundee, but I'll see what happens. But I would imagine whatever it's on next week, I'd imagine there'll be a big clamour to have the game on at a neutral venue with a nice pitch that, you know, both teams can play football on. Quite frankly, I don't care. I'm happy for them to play in a Rasul mud bath, should that be required. So, see what happens, but very little hope for Dundee. So, you know, I'd just rather get them played and know exactly where we stand.
Stuart, your kind of thoughts on it overall?
I think it is objectively a funny situation. I think for a man who appears to have quite a short fuse, it tickles me how much time Philip Clement is having to spend in front of cameras talking about the weather in Dundee. And I agree with Alan that I don't think that it really matters when they play it. I don't think that it's going to be a particular hurdle, but it's funny just how much of a sideshow it's become now. And you can see the seeds being sown for neutral venue or a home game when there's not been a lot of public comment from the club about why they weren't able to play it on that first available Wednesday. And I think the other thing that it's maybe not for us to discuss as much because it's maybe not as funny, but it is an absolute disgrace that Dundee are in that position when there's a game happening, I believe, right now, 100 yards away from them, Dundee United. Not 100 yards, that'd be dangerous, but up the road, and they've got like a lawn green. So it is a disgrace at the top level. It's a bizarre little situation. I think that it probably does benefit us to just go and get your points on the board. And I think that, as we will discuss with the derby, it remains all about us and what we have to do. And so nothing changes from our perspective. They can go and win. They can go to the points clear. It doesn't matter at all. So hopefully they get it played next week. And I look forward to all the statement tennis that will go on in and around it until then.
Yeah, there's been a lot of statement tennis already, and it's just, we'll move on from it. I just wanted to highlight it because it is kind of like pretty topical, and the fact is, you know, Rangers postponed it last week or got it postponed or whatever, and this is all their own doing, and again, it's all, you know, all woe is me kind of thing. Get up, you. Looking at the Aberdeen VAR situation where Aberdeen have released a statement, do you know, there's a lot of kind of points to be discussed on that, and we'll probably leave that to the weekend update tomorrow, because I'm not sure anyone really has the stomach to talk about VAR at this point because of the Derby and stuff, although, you know, VAR obviously related to the Derby, but we'll certainly come to that. But I just want to highlight the state one sentence from or paragraph from the Aberdeen statement, and it's just this: what this situation demonstrates, in our opinion, is that this version of VAR that Scottish football has, or more accurately can afford, is not suitable for the purpose in which it is intended. It perfectly highlights the limitations in this technology, the inappropriate implementation, the consistency of decision making, and the negative impact on the overall experience for the match going supporters. Sums it up, Alan, pretty well.
Yeah, I think they've hit the nail on the head. They've quite rightly, I think, thrown in a number of gripes that then beef it up and make you agree with it. I think the specific issue they're annoyed with, I think it's quite clear that they didn't follow process. You should go with the on-field decision, right or wrong, at the time, rather than trying to use the footage that you have and say, does he look offside, does he not? I think you revert back to the old process, really. If there's an error with the technology, which there was, it doesn't matter whether the, you know, VAR team using still images get it right or not. That's not what you should do. You should revert to the original process. I think the issues, I think there'll be one team this week that will be particularly happy with the way VAR is implemented. I think, though, if you look at it over a longer period, in fact, no, I don't. I'm sure they'll be pretty happy consistently. I think from our point of view, just going to games, having no idea in a stadium what's happening, how easy it is, I think, for VAR to interject itself. I think we probably all had sight of some of the Champions League games this week, and I thought it was great. It was like you're watching a great standard of football, but you're also watching referees who are comfortable that unless they're flagged up and told you have made a grave error here, they will just play the game and let people debate, you know, of decisions. I think we would prefer that. At the weekend, I thought, again, VAR gets involved in something that's not a clear and obvious error, and you then spend days talking about it. And I just feel we've moved quite far away from exactly what we were sold over a year ago about what VAR would do, how it would be implemented, how it would be used, how it would benefit the game. And actually, it's front and centre most weeks now. Whether it goes for you, goes against you, I try and take that wee element of tribalism out. It involves itself far too much, and I think people are getting quite annoyed with it. And I think Aberdeen's statement is talking about maybe kind of hinting at doing away with it. I don't think that's on the table. I think what we need to do, though, is think, how do we move forward into the next kind of stage of it and really make it, really strip it back, because it's involved far too often and games are being re-refereed at different levels every week, and it's just tiring, to be honest.
It is tiring, but let's just finish up on that. Stuart, you want to give us your comments and thoughts?
Yeah, firstly, I thought it was a really well-worded statement. I thought it was there was lots of common sense, and I thought that they put the point across without it sounding bitter or reactionary, I suppose would be a better term. Obviously, you've seen Brendan Rodgers recently has been punished for speaking quite publicly immediately after the events of how VAR was implemented. I haven't sort of seen any indication that that's going to happen to Aberdeen, and I think that more than anything, perhaps having a club that's not Celtic or Rangers come out with quite a sensible statement and a pretty egregious implementation of VAR helps maybe move you towards that conversation about collectively, collectively, the majority of the teams are unhappy with how this is being used. It's ruining the product overall. What can we do? I think it may come down to the amount of money that you spend on it and how you can do that, whether it's additional training, additional technology, whatever it is, there has to be some sort of line in the sand. I thought it was interesting today that the semi-automatic offsides have been passed in the Premiership. So you're talking about the richest league in the world, who are now going to be operating at a sort of Champions League level week in, week out in every game. And so you can no longer really compare the two technologies because they're both completely different. They operate completely different ways. And I think that it's not really sustainable to go on like this. It's not replaced any of the ambiguity or any of the issues with refereeing decisions. It seems like you get as many, if not more, And as Alan rightly points out, it's just far too much of a thing. It's every week, every game, there's always something. And in games like, you know, the one we've just had at the weekend, these can be like season defining decisions because they're not using the technology correctly, and that's not really good enough.
Yeah, absolutely. We will kind of touch on this a little bit more tomorrow on the weekend update. So if you want to get involved in that, if you go to thecynic.co, you can subscribe to The Cynic. And also, we've had lots of podcasts this week about the Derby, and we've covered it in lots of different ways. So what we thought we'd do this week is we thought we'd put out a survey and get kind of the support's kind of thoughts collectively, also get the thoughts of the panel. So it's 10 questions. We'll go through them. We'll get your guys' thoughts. We're going to talk about the Derby. We'll get some kind of, I've chosen some comments that kind of give perspectives and point of view. So it was about 250 people that took part in the survey, which was a kind of good turnout. So the first question was, how confident are you of winning the league post-Derby? So what can you take from the weekend from a confidence point of view? I'm just going to read out the results and then I'll get your point of view. So the first option was more confident, less confident, or same as before the Derby. And a resounding 61.86% of people were more confident, 5% were less confident, and then about 33% were same as pre-Derby. How are you feeling on that, Alan? You more, less, or same as pre-Derby?
More confident. I think we talked about it Monday. I think if you're looking at that time, the seven fixtures that were remaining, going to Ibrox in the position that we were in, I think there was the potential that if Rangers won that game, it wouldn't have guaranteed them the title, but it would have, I even think saying put them in the driving seat, I think it's putting it mildly. I think it would have made it a very, very straightforward position for them. They could have kept it Celtic Park and lost and still won the league if they, you know, seen off the other teams. I think going there, strip away the context of the game, how it started, how it ended, I think the fact that Celtic are in a stronger position than we were at 10 to 12 on Sunday afternoon is massive. I think it's huge. I also think given the kind of Jekyll and Hyde type performances of the team this year, you really didn't know what to expect. And I think to go there, play like that, then adds an element to it. So there's the basic maths of it, which you take away a game at Ibrox, which is an opportunity in front of a partisan crowd to win and really, you know, do a, whatever you do at the end, lap of honour. Granted, they still did do that, fair play. And be in that great position. But we took that away and you've now got a game where you put that pressure on yourself. And I think that's massive. I think if we had won the game on Sunday, you would still be, you'd be in a great position, you'd be feeling great, but you would still be in a largely the same position. It does change that Derby, and it means you do have the onus to go and win it, but I think that is the way we play the game. I don't think there's any change in mentality required for us there, so I'm really positive, really excited. I was really happy with Sunday, and if you'd have offered me a pre-game, I would have absolutely snapped your hand off. The fact that we're in a better position now than we were ahead of the game can only mean that I really think you can only be more positive after Sunday.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Stuart, what's your take, sir?
Yeah, considerably more confident, I have to say. And I think everything that Alan has said, if you strip the context of the game away, is spot on. But I actually think that if you look at the context of the game, there's lots to build confidence from as well. In an incredibly tight title race where there's a lot of pressure, I don't think Celtic looked even remotely phased going into that environment, which I think bodes really, really well. I thought they handled the pressure. Obviously, it's as good a start as you could hope for, somewhat of a freak start, but you immediately sort of take the sting out of the crowd. You're able to just settle into the game. But they looked sharp and they looked on it, and the way they pressed in the first half I thought was brilliant. Took the chance when it came along. Obviously, could have been more clinical, but these things happen in these really tight games. So they come down to like individual little moments of brilliance or whatever. In the second half, I think a lot of people, I understand why people were disappointed, frustrated and negative given the position we were in. But the way the second half went is how I expected the full 90 to go. And I thought we were going to be really under the cosh for the whole thing and it would be a real test of mentality. And if you look at it, they were given a very dubious penalty decision that does somewhat swing the momentum, brings the crowd back into it, makes them more of a factor. They have a goal, which I'm not trying to take away any of the individual errors that led to it, but it's an enormous slice of luck. That ball was going out for a throw in and it ends up in the top corner. And then again, take nothing away from the finish at the end. It's a magnificent finish, but if you're given the freedom of Govan to sort of walk in and do the exact thing that he did 7 days ago and that would have been in the pre-match briefings, and to not defend against it is pretty criminal. So there are small individual errors there, but generally speaking, I thought that we managed the game really well, and there was a lot to suggest that even scoring after they've kind of levelled shows that there is a resilience to the team that we've questioned and been concerned about. And also, when things started to fall apart a bit, you saw it was when the likes of Rio Hitati kind of came out of the game, and not fit Callum McGregor goes in. So there are somewhat mitigating factors, not to excuse what happened, but there's just so much that I think you can extrapolate towards the other games that's really, really positive. And I would really just say as well, just how poor that Rangers team were in the first half doesn't look like perhaps they would be as equipped to handle the pressure of coming to Celtic Park. It was a must-win game. And lastly, I don't want to ruin Barry's honeymoon, but if you've got four home games and two winnable away games to win the league, you should be able to do that. And if you can't, then maybe you don't deserve to win the league. So I think it puts us in a great position, and I think there's a lot of signs that they can have that quality and consistency to go and get it done.
Alan, see if they don't get that penalty at that time and we kind of ride the storm a little bit, do you think it would have been different? Do you think maybe their fans get on their back a little bit more? Or was that kind of them pressing us a little bit higher, it did cause a little bit of kind of nervousness in the back line? Was that always going to happen? Or do you think if we'd held out for a little bit longer, we might have kind of seen through that kind of rough period?
Yeah, I think the longer you can maintain a two-goal advantage, I do think you start to think maybe the game's winding down. I think probably most people were looking at the clock and thinking, you know, I don't know if people do the same as me, but you attach milestones to certain parts of the game, and I think we were very close to a milestone that would have felt significant. I think there was always an understanding. I don't know how other people felt. At half-time, I didn't feel the game was won. I was absolutely delighted. I didn't think the game was won. I didn't think for a second that Rangers would come out and play the same way. You're 2-0 down. You don't really have much to lose by coming out and just pressing high. In saying that, they did do that. I don't think, though, that they were creating clear-cut opportunities. It wasn't like they were wasteful and they had all these great chances. So, look, it will sound like sour grapes. They're always as sour grapes when things don't go your way. But at that time in the game, they're not creating opportunities. When you do get handed a gift like that, you know, it does change the momentum of the crowd, I think. I don't think that's, you know, unreasonable to point that out. You give them something where they couldn't fashion really any opportunities. I think we would have came under, even if they hadn't got that, we would have came under pressure. But, you know, you think about after the penalty, I know that they have the goal very quickly after, but as a clear foul, I don't really think there's any dispute over that, and you can talk about phases of play all you like. They run directly up the park and score. So I think you know, there's a bit of false equivalency going on, which is classic in these scenarios when you've had a bit of injustice against you. You pick something else that isn't really the case and then say, well, you know, it works out in the end. I think if you had gone a little bit longer, then, you know, you might have got something out of the game. But I think they would have always, you know, shelled balls into the box. They would have made changes. I don't think I ever thought that the second half would pan out exactly as the first. So it is frustrating. It is really disappointing. I think I'm trying to put it very, very mildly. But, you know, it's done now. But I would like, you know, I was happy that the club certainly queried it. I don't hold out great hope. But I think it is extremely frustrating. And for John Beaton to be shown what he was shown and, you know, completely change his own mind within the space of, you know, a minute and a half, I think is just, yeah, it's predictable, to be fair.
Well, John Beaton wasn't shown what he was shown. I think that's perhaps the main issue. He wasn't shown.
He was shown what he was needed to be shown, in my opinion. But well, again, yeah. Let's part that there. I said that Monday. It's the booking, I think, that kills it. I think John Beaton booking him, I think, causes a problem, because then he can't justify booking him, because technically it's not a dive, because there is contact. And I think that's, if he hadn't booked him, I think you could have easily looked at it and shown it and said, no, I can see that there was contact. How it was initiated on, how he reacted to it, I don't think merited a penalty. And I think because he'd booked him, I think he'd backed him into a corner. And yeah, that's what led to that, I think. And the loaded angles.
I thought he was going to send Johnson off. I thought that was the full circle. So when it came away, I was like, almost relieved that we'd kind of been shafted, but only a wee bit. And then also, see when, I know, Alan, it's still your favourite moment of the season, when in the first game when he points to for the free kick and they all think it's a goal. I fell for that again.
Yeah, me too.
Because
yeah.
I thought he pointed to the semicircle and I literally got up and walked out of the room. And my girlfriend was like, I don't think it's a goal. I was like, what are you talking about? He pointed at the spot. So anyway, that's just an aside. Just one last thing in regards to like holding out in that second half. I thought Cameron Carter-Vickers' comments were pretty interesting after the game. So you're talking about your best player, this player that gives you this solid base to build from and you know, is vital in these sorts of games when your back's to the wall. And he said that they expected it to be like wave after wave of attack and that it's incredibly difficult, even in the best defence, to hold out when it's that consistent. And he talked about how I almost felt like he was airing a little bit of a grievance with some of the players in the team, that what you really want to do is hold possession higher up the pitch. That's the only way to really get out of that. It's not to try and suddenly be the attacker, but just to go and slow the game down further up the pitch to let you get settled. And I think that that was something that really evidently we struggled with once Hatate went off. And especially, I would even credit Kuhn with that a little bit, because Yang certainly didn't have the maturity to kind of think like that. And everything was a bit rushed and everything was a bit kind of off. And that's a concern that we've had. It's nothing that I'm sure can't be coached out of him. He's a very promising player, but I think that that's where we struggled. And I think they know that that's maybe where they've struggled. And I don't think that that's necessarily something that would happen as you progress through these last games, if you can keep Hatate fit playing for 90 minutes or get something better out of McGregor.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple of comments from the people taking the survey. Was very confident for the derby and was 50-50 for the league, only because I'm worried about dropping points elsewhere during the split and still feel the same. Maybe slightly leaning towards us because fuck them. I'm more confident. I know they rescued a point, but Rangers were genuinely a lot worse than I expected. Fairly sure we'll beat them at home, and hopefully this result performance focuses a few minds for the other fixtures. And one more. My concerns are dropping points against the likes of Kelly, and I don't know. I really fear them getting what they need from the remainder of their games, bar the game against us. Hearts, etc. We'll just roll over and take it from them. Pretty accurate. The second question was, who were the key players on the day? It's really close. I was quite surprised how close it was. Not overly surprised, but the options were Maeda, Hatate, O'Reilly, and CCV. I said that a bit funny, haven't I? So the winner with 37.29% was Rio Hatate. Second place was Maeda. Third place was CCV. And fourth place was Matt O'Reilly, which quite interesting. Stuart Duggan, key player on the day for you.
I think I voted for Hatate as well, but to be honest, I would probably have them in that order, maybe swapping O'Reilly and CCV. But also, I thought all of them were excellent.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the reasons that the first half was so impressive was that, to a man, everyone, I thought, sort of did their bit. Don't let Kieran Devlin tell you otherwise. Pretty much nobody got pass marks from Kieran on Monday, which I was surprised by, but such is life. I thought that there was lots of, I think what Rio Hatate gives you especially is just this option to take the ball into tight spaces and just keep it and move it up the park and be calm. And I thought that there was a calmness with that in the first half that, you know, we lost as the game went on, but was really evident. And it just shows how much you've missed him. And you sort of start to think about all these things that could have gone your way in these tight games or these games where we've performed poorly and lost control of the game in the last 10 and a half hour of games. So I thought he was vital, and to get that level of performance out of him, having played such little football, just speaks to the quality of the player, and also, I guess, his attitude and mindset in coming back. And I think he'll be absolutely crucial. If you can keep him fit over the next six games, then I think that you stand a really good chance. But outside of Hatate, you know, Maeda's just tireless work and just giving Tavernier the worst time every single game and still having no idea how to cope with the press is always kind of entertaining to see. And I thought Matt O'Reilly was excellent. I think he has been much better the last couple of games. We sort of did suggest that maybe that would be the case when Hatate comes back into it. And CCV, yes, we've conceded a lot of goals, but I do think you just have that solidity. And I think it breeds confidence. And I think that even if it's not the showiest of performances, I thought he was still very good. And I think that just having him there breeds confidence for the other players to go and build on that and build a performance.
It was very tight, Alan. I think maybe you highlighted on the agenda that Hitati kind of was just maybe slightly ahead of O'Reilly. What's your take on how tight it was with Maeda, Hitati, O'Reilly and CCV?
Yeah, I think O'Reilly and Hitati, I thought, were excellent. I thought they were both exceptional and they were just so important to what we were trying to do. The amount of times we played out in the first half and just sprung the traps that were there was great to see, because Rangers did sit fairly deep, but you still managed to draw them in and then hit them with it. And I think the wingers probably, I think it's probably as good a display as you've seen from Celtic wingers on both sides of the park, certainly for the first, 45 minutes. I think Maeda was exceptional. I mean, I think I said in one of the chats after, he's an absolute lock to get a drugs test, because he had both the poise. I know he had the opportunity and we had the one, the left foot cross, it was in the crowd. He was just so instrumental though to everything, both in his aggression. Sometimes he was taking the ball short, then he was feigning that running behind, which they are terrified of. And when you've had a performance like that and you've been kind of turned inside out the way you have like that, you don't forget that and just decide, all right, okay, well, next time will be better. You are aware of that. And I think there is a problem there that Rangers will maybe have to tackle for the next game. So I think the wingers probably deserve a little bit of credit as well. Couldn't just drive in with the ball, taking you 20 yards, 25 yards up the park. That's not something we've seen a lot this season, where a winger can comfortably, drive with the ball. So I'd probably, just for a bit of variety and maybe pick out Maeda. Gets you off to that great start with sheer endeavour. But I thought his overall aggression in the game was superb, both with and without the ball. Really a top-class performance from him. My only kind of regret is maybe we weren't as kind of clinical when we did get into those opportunities. Not Maeda himself, but, Kyogo has a good chance. I think everybody in that kind of front three had opportunities that they would love to have back again, but really, really positive signs. And I thought Maeda was exceptional.
Sure.
Just on Maeda, I think it would have been before the last derby, the Parkhead one, that I don't know if either of you saw it, but he was interviewed by Celtic TV and he's a very serious man in general. And he got asked a question just about the importance of the game. And his answers really stuck with me, that he basically said that if we don't win this game, it will affect my quality of life. My life in this city will be worse. As in, when I go out and about, I'll either be taunted or abused, or people will be angry at me. So he was just terrifying, frankly, to just stare down the barrel of the camera and say that. And I don't know whether or not he's just takes these games on another level, because he does seem a lot more focused, and you don't see as, I know he had that one cross, but you don't really see as much of that. And yeah, just I think if you're going to have players in the squad where this is the game that they can turn it on and sort of maximise performance, a man fearing for the safety of his children and his life is he plays like that. It's like a Jean-Claude Van Damme film or something like that.
It was the moment in the game where he ran across the box with the ball and he took the extra touch again, and you're thinking, we've seen this before, where he maybe just run it in the air, and then he did the spin with the ball, and you just thought, he is on it today. You really did think, I think he does get a lot of, I think there are people who can't see past some of the flaws in his game. I think a performance at the weekend just highlights, see, to have a player like that in front of you, it's just, I can't imagine what it must be like for Greg Taylor. You're always get help. You've always getting, he's always working back. If a winger tries to, maybe feign Greg Taylor one way and then the other, if he can buy time, Maeda will always get there. And it is incredible. But I thought it was his intent going forward that was really, really positive at the weekend. And I was delighted for him. His reaction when he scored the goal, I know it's very early, and when you score a goal that early, you're always kind of tempted to just, right, it's very early to score a goal. But it was hard not to just be just delighted for obviously us, but for him as well. Just that wee smile is, you just love him. I hope he gets a medal this season. I hope he gets a league winner's medal and a Scottish Cup medal. That's how much I like Dyson Maeda.
Yeah, good that you're giving him that. I just want to say, there's a comment here, we'll move on, but there's a comment here which I think is quite interesting. So most of the comments from the survey are based around Maeda, O'Reilly and Hitati. But there is a comment here, and it basically says, "No CCV, without CCV, we lose that game." And I think that's quite interesting, because obviously Hitati does, he comes off early in the second half, but the work he does in the first half really kind of sets the scene. And Maeda, obviously, you know, he rightfully sets the scene by scoring that goal early on. But obviously, no CCV, we don't win the game. Do you agree with that statement, Stuart?
Yeah, probably, just because the alternatives are absolutely honking. So I think, we've talked a lot about it since he's kind of come back into the team, what he gives you. And I think, am I right in thinking there's a question about like areas of concern
in
that survey? I mean, I think the ultimate area of concern is you know, his defensive partner in the centre of that pairing. And I think that he's such a good player that he can marshal lesser players through games. And yeah, certainly, I think that I'm actually starting to think, I wonder if that's as much of a hindrance for Liam Scales as anything, because I don't know whether or not he thrives on just being such an underdog that he has like sort of leadership capabilities, and when he's expected to sort of fall into the secondary role, he regresses to this quite average, if I mean that's a gentle sort of praise, player. Because if you think about his performance at Ibrox last time, he really stood up and was counted when no one would have thought he would have been. And you saw that in some of his European performances as well, just where you're like, there's no chance that he's going to pull out a performance, and he does. But sort of digressed massively there. Yes, Cameron Carter-Vickers is very important to Celtic.
Another comment, Stuart. Alan, just before we move on. Without CCV, even if we still had the same first half, I believe with the pressure we found ourselves under in the second, we would not have won the game. That fair statement?
Yeah, but you obviously don't want to be unkind to the rest of the players, but he does hold that defence together, and it's patchwork, I think, because you're right to point out Scales. I think the fullbacks at times have really shown a frailty this season as well. When CCV is there, though, the unit does look much, much stronger. He's much calming. I think, especially when you're playing against, just very quickly, when you're playing against a team like Rangers who do like to get the ball forward quickly, that's really been a problem for us this season. You know, teams, whether it's in possession or whether they're just emptying the ball out from a turnover, a long ball up the field has caused us far more problems than it should for a team of our calibre. When CCV's in the team, he doesn't mind it so much. He uses his body really, really well to marshal strikers around him and then try and win the ball. And if he's uncomfortable, then he'll just play it straight back up the park. So I think a team like Rangers, who are a, you know, pretty direct team, they are quite comfortable sending it long. I think it is important to have a defender that's in control and can judge the flight of the ball, but can also then try and bring it down and play. His distribution isn't his greatest strength, but he does bring the ball under control very, very well. So, yeah, I wouldn't be particularly confident if you were to, you know, Rangers score that penalty and you're looking at your back four if CCV wasn't there, seeing out half an hour with a crowd behind them, but you know, he is there at the moment, and hopefully does stay fit the rest of the season, particularly for that home game against Rangers.
The third question in the survey was, what aspect of play from Sunday gave you most encouragement? I'm just going to read out some of the comments. Mostly they were based around the midfield and the first half performance. Here's another couple of comments. Midfield of O'Reilly and Hitati are a class above what we have. They couldn't live with them in the first half. The fight shown by players, they wanted it. just confirmation, the jumped up media's version of this Voldemort team are actually very average. I thought we looked confident on the ball first half and moved it at speed through midfield. We had a pace in the wide areas and could have scored more if we'd been more clinical in the final third. Hitati being back is a huge positive too. And finally, control of the midfield in the first half. Also the fact we didn't give up too many big chances when under the cosh, which is something you've kind of made the comment of, Alan. Stuart, this goes into our kind of overall kind of discussion of the game, but what's the biggest piece of encouragement for you?
I think I wrote half-time booze, but I think I was just being silly because I couldn't think of anything, so sorry about that. I think that they are excellent points about the midfield, and obviously we've kind of talked about the positives of having Hitati and O'Reilly fit and firing as we come into this kind of like important stretch of games. I think just generally there looked like a composure to the team that we didn't know if they had. I guess the jury's still out because we haven't been particularly consistent, but maybe that's a question that they can ask over these last few games. They looked like they were composed and that they weren't fazed by it. And as I say, to have that sort of setback of giving up your two-goal lead and then almost immediately going scoring. It's a shame for obviously a number of reasons that they conceded again, but it had all the hallmarks of like a of basically like the Eddie 3-2 game where you just think that you've been done. It's even a kind of similar finish as well. I know he kind of goes further inside, but it was, I thought it was very reminiscent of that. And it's a shame that it wasn't a big keep your distance sort of moment. But I thought the fact that they had that sort of level of resilience was pleasing, if not frustrating, that one player switched off towards the end.
Alan, yourself, the biggest pieces of encouragement?
I think midfield's, you know, fairly reasonable to point out. I think the balance in the team that brings, though, is really important. And I think the other player that comes to mind, you know, supporting cast or new addition, however you want to put him, was Nicholas Coon. I think it was a big, big game for him because he's not played against a team of, you know, the kind of top three team in the league, top four team in the league, and his best performances were against Livingston and St Johnston. To go into that game, I'm not overplaying, you know, his role, but I thought he was really effective. He was able to bring the ball at the park. His delivery was really, really good. And he just looked really, really calm. I thought he looked quite composed. He looked like he had a ton of pace, likes to drive inside. I thought he did give Sterling a pretty tough time. So I think having that balance, having two wingers on either side where you're comfortable going down the right as much as the left, because I think all season we've really had no balance in the team, whether that's because of players missing or players not performing. I think on Sunday, that lineup, you'd be quite happy to go either side, to come back in, go out again. So the balance in the team, I think, was really, really important. And if we can keep that and have that, that's really important. Just very quickly on top of that, I don't think Brendan Rodgers gets substitutions right at the weekend, but I think there are options now on the bench, viable options that you can use and go to. I think, look, we'll talk about McGregor and things like that, but there are proper options on the bench. Bernardo gave you a little bit of something. I think Yang can contribute. Granted, you'd rather he contributes in the final third for us, but there are more options there. There is, you know, proper competition for places. And again, that's something we've really not had for any length of time this season.
The next two questions are very similar and they're linked. And I'll read question number four is, what aspect of play from Sunday concerned you most? And I'm not going to lie, everyone, if you took part in the survey, you had to answer this. And majority of them are about Liam Scales. There's a couple of them that are not, and I've picked them out as well. So here's the other kind of different ones. The ability to stop counter-attacks in space between midfield and defence, same as most of the season. Fullbacks failing to deal with their wingers. More an issue in the second half, especially with Sima versus Taylor. Neither fullback played well, and they're the best we've got. One against a half-fit Sima, and the other against a cheat, obviously. The final one I'll point out is, we struggled to regain a foothold on the game once they pressed more aggressively in the second half. This has been evident in each of the derbies and in many of our games. There's more coherence to our play and greater pace, but we haven't been able to perform well on two consecutive halves for pretty much the whole season. Scales has done well, but his limitations have been laid bare recently. An upgrade is required in the summer. I mean, very, very succinctly put, Stuart. This does play into the fifth question, which is based around what areas of the pitch concerned you the most, and central defence get 59%. Second was fullbacks, so we can maybe have a chat around that. Stuart, we've been very positive so far, and I think it's right to be positive, but we also need to be constructive in the performance. What concerned you?
Yeah, it's not even constructive. I think it's just realistic that for all the, you know, that first half performance I thought was excellent across the board, but there were a number of times when, you know, Liam Scales was arguably Rangers' best player. Yeah, he just conspired to give the ball away. There was times when I was astonished at the amount of times that Rangers just passed the ball out of play or just passed the ball to someone that were just stood like waiting to be tackled. And I sort of thought that Scales had a bit of that about him as well. And I know you had a bit of a discussion about it on the agenda that it's almost not worth discussing. Like, the Scales experiment's over. Like, it's very evident that he will play the last six games, yeah, providing he's fit. I think that it is something that has to be addressed in the summer. I don't think it's something that Rodgers would be ignorant to. I just think that Liam Scales must have something about him, personality-wise, application-wise, that Rodgers prefers to the options that he has, because I think that all of them have frailties, whether that comes to playing out from the back or just like defensively. Certainly, I would prefer to see Navrotsky given a chance over Scales, but say it's a bit of a moot point just now.
Yeah.
I think that that's an area that, whatever reason, Rodgers has said that he's planted his flag in the ground on Liam Scales, whether that's been to do with negotiations with the board or trying to prove a point or just one of these little things that he does just for ego or attitude or whatever. I think that that will be resolved in the summer. I would be astonished if we started next year and that was the centre back pairing, because you can't look at that and not see how blatant it is. And there's some folk that never gave Scales his dues when he deserved them. But similarly, I can't think of anyone that could defend it now. I think it's that glaringly obvious when you go through that first 11. And obviously, it's something that we haven't really had to deal with, because Starfelt and Carter Vickers were such a safe pairing for the last two seasons that it became like a real automatic thing. And
Yeah.
I think that that elevates the level of your fullbacks as well. Just they have that security, they have someone else that can tuck in and help, and they have looked a bit exposed. And I feel like we're just rehashing old debates, that Greg Taylor is an excellent part of the squad, but he shouldn't be, the gold standard at left back. He should be the sort of standard of player that can compete. And I think that Alistair Johnson, just across the board, hasn't had his best season. And he has had games recently where he's been really, really good. I think he was pretty harassed. And it's a difficult position to be in as quite a physical player, playing against someone who's absolutely intent on, simulating and play acting
Yeah, you
every
kind of get it.
eventual kind of chance he gets. So doesn't excuse it, but it's a hard place to go. It's a hard place to come out and have a really good game. But I think, yeah, quite right. Those were the obvious areas of concern.
Just on, just a thought, Alan, and maybe get your thoughts on this as well, Stu, is obviously Navrotsky and Lagerbielke are, well, Lagerbielke is completely out of the picture. He'll more than likely go in the summer. He's in the ditch. But Navrotsky is someone who has had opportunities under Brendan Rodgers, and then, he's had injuries and stuff. If he can't get into the team ahead of Scales, is it a case of he has to be replaced in the summer as well? Like, are we going into this summer with essentially one centre back? Maybe if Rodgers fancies Scales for a second season, is it a case of two and then you have to kind of build on that? Or is it a case of we go to the summer and then we reset because this season has been a bit all over the place?
I think you probably get a reset. Navrotsky's a little different in that you spent a fair whack of cash on him. He's not an internationalist. He's not played a lot of football. He's had two serious injuries this year. So you're not going to make your money back on him. I think for what it's worth, I think Lagerbielke, you probably will make your money back on, or somewhat close to it,
Yeah.
because if he goes to the right team, he'll do really, really well. I think everyone gets a reset under Brendan Rodgers. I think the problem is that Stu's gonna, I think you need one other that's your Starfelt replacement, if you like, on a player of that caliber. Bear in mind, Curra Starfelt was a 26 or 27-year-old Swedish internationalist when we signed him. Those don't come easy or come cheap, especially for us. So I think it will be difficult, but I think on Scales, just the one thing, I know we did talk about it Monday, but again, I think I've got a little bit of not. I've got sympathy a little bit for Brendan Rodgers, and you can't trust any of the other guys to come in and stay fit. So with what, eight games tops to go in the season, if we make the Scottish Cup final, it's a huge risk to play Navrotsky, have to have him learn on the job. And that's what this season feels like. We have had too many players this season that have been learning on the job as we go. And maybe we're starting to get to a place now where some of them have learned on the job. I just think for eight games of the season, Stephen Welsh, just he's so injury prone. He picks up injuries very, very easily. Navrotsky's had two serious injuries and he's really struggled to play. I think it might be circumstance for Brendan Rodgers. I think Navrotsky is far better with the ball. He's very, very slow, but he is better with the ball. But for eight games, even 10 games, it's two serious injuries. I just don't see him coming in. I think the one thing that That jumped out just going back to the question was the comment flagging up an inability to deal with a press. That's my biggest concern between now and the end of May. And the reason for that is I think the game at Celtic Park isn't going to be the same game. I think Rangers will know that they did get away with one, if you like, that they've, you know, managed to get a draw out of a game that they were 2-0 down at half time. I don't see them coming and sitting off and trying to play that compact. I think they will come and be aggressive and say, we're not going to let you get that ball into midfield. Now, if we can play out, then that creates so much opportunity. But we've struggled against teams this season at home that have pressed us, and the teams of a much lesser calibre. So that is a worry for me, that we think that the game at Celtic Park will just be the Ibrox game with the same setup, but with Celtic fans behind us. It's a different game, and I think they'll approach it. I think they'll approach it very differently, because I think they'll accept that if they try and do that again, that they're really at the mercy of how we feel in the day. So that's my biggest thing between now and the end of the season, is we need to, if teams press us and, you know, are aggressive against us, that we remain composed and we can punish them.
I can agree more. I think that's the key kind of question that needs to be answered.
Also, just, I was talking about the as looking way ahead, but I know Stuart Duggan is a man who loves looking to way ahead to derbies. That game at Celtic Park, I think there has to be a wee bit of almost like a kind of understanding, I think, from the crowd on the day, that you need to make it an overwhelmingly positive atmosphere. You need to absolutely make sure that if 25 minutes it's nothing each and things are slow, that we get behind the team. And I mean, I don't, you know, I mean the fan groups, I mean everyone going. It is very easy, and that game is going to be so tense, but we've all been at games at Celtic Park where things aren't going away and we get the players back. I think you've seen how toxic that can be, and I just think almost I can understand from everyone going, right, try and rein it in a bit and just be overwhelmingly positive. If there is a way we can do that, hand out wee flyers on the way in, just one at a time. Here's the new code of conduct. That would be very helpful.
Sure.
I think that would be helpful. I think, though, one of my other main takeaways is that just quality for quality over the pitch, I think there is still a big bit of a gap between the sides. And I think that there's also a bit of a gap with the mentality. And I'm not making any bold proclamations or predictions or anything, but I'm not convinced that Rangers team has the mentality to go to a packed Celtic Park when they absolutely have to get a result and get it. And the optimum situation would obviously be to move the game to 8 p.m. Under the lights and get everyone a wee charge on. But hopefully we can get a nice positive crowd that helps us get over the line. And I think, to be honest, that's going to be really important for all the games Saturday as well. I think that finally maybe feels like you're at a point, and better late than never, where you have like real unity between the fans, the board, just because they're not really doing anything particularly abrasive in the moment. And
give them time,
coach and playing staff, that everyone can just get on the same page, and it can be a real collective effort to get over the line.
Question six was, do you believe the referee's decision had a significant impact on the outcome of the derby? You'd be surprised to see that 94% of people said yes. Who are these people voting no? Come on. I'm going to read out some comments. Not even just the penalty and the bookings. That may very well be booking, but consistency is all we ask. It's the way it's the way he lets Rangers control the tempo. Stupid wee fouls that aren't. Goldson catching the ball. That is a major influence. Yes. This is another comment. First gets the big penalty decision wrong. Didn't need to come into it further, but the niggly fouls he gives them, but not us. The bookings in the first half and general lack of consistency is a bigger issue, in my opinion. He didn't punish them for their fouls, in particular Silva's diving. He should have changed his decisions with their penalty. I don't believe VAR should have been involved. And the final one, penalty changes everything. Beaton also allowed their players to ref the game. Goldson falling over. Right, so I mean, essentially, he let Rangers ref the game. That Goldson falling over clip is fucking wild. Just that whole idea of them just falling on the ball and then picking the ball up as if to say, well, that's a free kick, and him not pushing it. All the niggly fouls they get away with. I think it was 20 minutes until we get our first kind of free kick in the game. Alan Edgar, your thoughts on the referee?
I don't think he's... Third thing with a good game, I think it's quite funny that there's a rush, and there was a rush from very early after the game, right through the week, to for everyone, particularly pundits that are involved in the game, people around, to say, look, you had a good game. He didn't have a good game because he had to go to the monitor several times. He booked a player for diving, and then 30 seconds later or a minute later, he awarded a penalty to the other team. He missed a free kick right in front of him that led to a goal that he chased all the way up the park. I thought he was dreadful. I flagged up the Goldson one on Monday, I think, in the agenda, because at the time I genuinely thought I thought the TV was going to come off the wall. It's just the way that these games are refereed is different every time. And I think that's said it so many times. I think as a player, even experienced players in this game, it's very difficult to know what's good and what's not good. I mean, Matt O'Reilly gets himself a booting for the most bizarre non-tackle you'll ever see. And, you know, he's hardly involved, you know, in any kind of fracas before that. And you find yourself as a central midfield player and playing in a derby, 25 minutes in a game, you get yourself a yellow card. I thought he was awful. I really did. Appointing him in the first place, I think, was bizarre. It put pressure on him, and I don't think he handled it particularly well. The same as Stuart, the only mercy I had was that he didn't book Ali Johnston. I call him Ali Johnston as well now, by the way.
I was going to say,
I don't like that one bit. When did he sign for Rangers? I don't like that.
I think Johnston thought he was going to send him off as well. I just don't think he's a very good referee. I'm not going to be personal or anything like that. I thought he was really poor in the day. He's been really poor before in these games. I think the standard of refereeing in this country is awful, and I think it's only been made worse by VAR, because we don't understand how that works either, and that then meant that the game was kind of re-refereed, if you like, which has not helped.
Too much ban for Alan Edgar.
Stuart, any other comments on that? I think Alan's covered it well.
I think he's covered it very well. I think that the Goldson one is the most egregious, but the Kuhn one is also very, very bad. I think that if you just booked Kuhn for pulling the player back, I would almost be like, that's soft, but fair enough. But the fact that he justified it with like collective team fouls or something like that is just insane. And I know that that was a directive in England for time wasting, whereby if a team like consistently is time wasting, eventually if they're time wasting, the player time wasting will get booked. I think it happened to Tomiyasu for Arsenal and he eventually got sent off. But that's not a rule up here, and that's not what happened, and it was insane to have had that, because Carter Vickers, if anyone, that was kind of pushing his luck. He had a couple of like fairly, I think, reasonable fouls for this kind of game, good sensible fouls on the halfway line, etc. And yeah, just it's just a guy who's out of his depth, was put in a high pressure situation that he didn't cope with very well, and also supports one of the teams, so you're fucked from the get go.
Alan?
Yeah, I just think on that about maybe the kind of, I think maybe overthinking it a little bit. It's clear that he was aware that Silva was play acting, and he had many chances to nip it in the bud, but he didn't. Then for the penalty that Rangers got, he booked him for diving. And I think if he had done that earlier, then I don't think he would have felt the need in that scenario. I think the bar for booking a player for diving has to be pretty high. If there is contact and a player goes down, that's their right. In this case, I don't think he needed to book him, because there was contact. Look, I don't think it's a penalty. I think you watch it however many times you like. I just don't believe it's a penalty. I don't think there's enough there. I don't think that Ali Johnston has impacted him from getting there. He's got a touch in the ball. I'm not saying that the touch is the smoking gun, but there's enough of a touch there, and the contact is kind of initiated by the player who goes straight into that, that he doesn't need to do it. But again, I think he had it in his head that Silva had been play acting. He's then thought, I'm going to make my mark here. And lo and behold, as in all of these scenarios, to be honest, the decision that you think initially goes for you actually tends to work in Rangers' favour.
There was no way that if he hadn't booked him, though, that he was going to go to the monitor and say, well, especially if he's not shown the contact in the ball, that he was going to just like stick by his guns. He doesn't have the gumption for that.
Well, maybe not, actually. I think Rangers would have got a penalty in any scenario. But I think just from a kind of technical and process standpoint, when he's at that monitor having booked Silva, the question changes from, do you think it's a penalty, to you booked him for diving? So I think he's looking to see, did Silva dive? And I think when he sees the contact, I think that's what changes the mindset. Had he not booked him, I think he could go there and say, look, I did see that, and I seen that there was a come together, but I just don't think it's a penalty. Granted, if they could show him the incident from the angle he's seen it from, that might have helped, or maybe one of the other many angles, but they didn't. But I think the question in his mind went from, is it a penalty, to, well, I've booked him for diving. He didn't dive. There was contact. And I think that's what's killed it, to be honest.
Stu?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I thought
Super Ali Johnston gets done again.
Listen, we're coming up for our time. So there's another three or four questions, but they're not related to the derby. They're more kind of wide ranging. So what we'll do is we'll leave them for the weekend update tomorrow. If you're keen to hear more kind of coverage of the derby, we've already done three podcasts this week: the agenda, the roundup, and the midweek report, in which we talk about the derby and we kind of break it down. You can sign up for them at thecynic.co. All the details are there. But we're going to finish with the question, and it's just about, I'll just read it out, shall I? In what area would you like to see changes for the St Mirren game? And basically, I put down defence, midfield and attack. Defence came up at 72%. You can imagine basically, there was a lot of Liam Scales out, Navrotsky in. I'm going to highlight a couple of comments. In a perfect world, I'd like to see Navrotsky start alongside CCV, but there's absolute problems with fitness there. I'd probably still rather Scales than a half-fit Navrotsky, which kind of plays into your point, Alan, which you made earlier. Another comment: I'm actually quite comfortable with the 11 at the moment. Once McGregor is fit enough, he should come back in. There's a lot of debate on the Cynic podcast about Scales. He clearly has his issues, but the reality is that he'll play every game if available. I hope that changes next season, but people need to realise that for the rest of the season, he's going to be a choice. And another couple of comments: more energy in the middle of the park. Another one: keep the trio of Iwata, Hitate and O'Reilly. And finally, nowhere really. Scales isn't good enough, but we have no one better. Might rest Kyogo to keep Ida fit, but until Calmac is match fit, that's our best 11. Just looking at the St Mirren game, which is obviously, you know, the game after the derby is obviously always huge. You really need to kind of, you can do all that work in the derby, but if you don't get full points on the Saturday afterwards, it's almost for nothing. Stuart, how are you feeling going into the St Mirren game? Excited? Thoughts on the kind of lineup, how you'd like to approach it?
Yeah, I feel excited. I think they're all going to be exciting games. I think that they're all winnable games, though. And I think that the players will be focused, and I think that there's a lot of positives to take from the way they performed. And also, from what Rogers was saying the other day, it sounds like the players were a wee bit disappointed that they didn't get it over the line. So I think they might have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And you'd hope that, you know, there's been some cagey performances at Celtic Park this season when the team's not been playing well, but I think having the kind of courage to go and play the way they did at Ibrox should hopefully build a bit of confidence. And I think literally just having better players available for you, having Hitate able to play, having Carter Vickers there will go some way. I think that the lineup would be very similar to how it was on Sunday. There's nothing drastic that I'd look to change, although I don't believe Maeda trained today, so I'm not sure if he's got some sort of injury, in which case you might see Yang and
Kun,
which would be good. And if not, Palma's fit again, so it'd be good to get his minutes going just in terms of off the bench, just to try and get his fitness up so that he can be an option and can contribute, because there was a point not long ago when we thought that Kun was a write-off and we thought Yang was a write-off, and I think that a lot of people have Lewis Palma as a bit of a write-off, but he does have quality that he could come in really handy over these last few games. And I suppose that the most interesting one is just Callum McGregor and what happens with him, and I suspect that you want to try and just get to 60-70 minutes and then try and just manage his minutes for 20 minutes, half hour, and you don't want to make anything worse if you're wanting to try and get him back up for that last derby game. But he looked quite a bit off it, and I still don't think he's training properly. So it's just a bit of a high-wire act of whether you try and nurse him back into the team or whether you try and just really build some consistency and some momentum with Iwata, Hitate and O'Reilly. And I think you'll probably find it somewhere in the middle.
Alan, you mentioned on Monday when we discussed it that, you know, it's probably a case of leaving McGregor out this week. No disrespect to St Mirren, but, you know, you really need him fit for the kind of post-split games, and with Hitate coming in, he brings that quality, and O'Reilly hitting form as well. So there is an argument to say you probably could leave out McGregor for this game. Do you still think that's the case, or you think that, you know, Rodgers might just pull the trigger because every game is important?
Yeah, every game is important, but I think Cal McGregor, if he's not, I mean, he didn't train fully today, so that I think is indicative that but the game is, you've got one more day of training. I don't think he's ready. I would genuinely at this point think if you're not training fully on the Thursday before the game, you might not even feature in the match day squad at this point, because if he's not ready, you're as well making a decision elsewhere. I thought Alata handled himself relatively well at Ibrox. He's not Cal McGregor with the ball. He's not as good at progressing play, and that is going to be important this weekend, but I think he is a player though that does cover ground really well. St Mirren are really, really physical. You know, they are genuinely a running team as well, if you want to use that expression. So I think Alata actually fits quite well for this game. Other than that, I think you go the exact same, but I think you probably protect Callum McGregor. He didn't look fit. It wasn't a case of he didn't look match fit. He didn't look fit last weekend at Ibrox, and it really impacted his game. I think you trust the other guys in the team. Awata's done really, really well. Bernardo, I thought, showed a bit of poise when he came on. There's options there. So I think you trust the other guys to get it done. And, you know, hope McGregor's back and fit with an eye on what will probably be a Rangers game in, what, 3 weeks' time, 4 weeks' tops. I think that becomes your kind of your real target for the player, and actually take a couple of days, take a week, try and recover and let it rest up and see how it feels after that.
Stu?
I think with the person that mentioned Adam Ida, I'm surprised that Ida's not really been talked about a bit more this week, because I actually thought that he applied himself really well when he came on in a difficult position. The one where he takes the ball so well from Goldson, and it's basically like a 60-40. He doesn't even have any right to win it, and he does, and then his decision-making sort of lets him down. That's the sort of thing that could have killed the game, but I thought he created problems for them and obviously gets his goal, and I think that you want to kind of keep him sharp. I don't think that you're going to see Kyogo drop out of the team, but it might well be that if you can get the game boxed away by 60 minutes, which would be the ideal situation, I think that yes, you want to kind of keep Ida ticking over. Also, it's important to note that when things are this tight, that goal difference could be crucial. So you want to be able to have a team that can go right to the end. And it's not a case of getting the game done and then you shut up shop and start resting people. They have to have, you know, a real sort of clinical approach to everything right to the end.
Adam Ida's a guy who I think if we can get the right deal for him and we get, you know, the right price and we bring him in and we give him a pre-season, there's a lot there to like. And there's a lot, I think he could do something. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in this. That was actually one of the questions, and we'll talk through that tomorrow, because I thought, I just like his touch. I think he's got a really good touch. He looks quite fancy, if nothing else. Alan?
I liked the touch where he banged it under England's whatever choice goalkeeper. That was my favourite touch. Who had a stinker on the day, by the way, and I think Gareth Southgate, I don't know if he was still there at that point, but if he hadn't left by half-time, then I hope he's seen that. I enjoyed that, and I was delighted. I felt a bit bad for Ida, and, you know, not being a winner, because that would have been really special, but yeah. It turned out to be a very important goal, because there was a lot of time left in that game, so I enjoyed that touch particularly.
Very much so.
Peter Grant said on Sports Scene that Jack Butland should be England's number one. He said not even that he should be in the squad, he was like that he should be their number one.
I think he worked with him at Birmingham for many years, so I think there's a bit of bias there. I think England should make him the number one as well, actually. I agree. Yeah,
I do.
Because I don't particularly care for them winning a Euro, so I think Jack Butland being number one would help that. Also, see if he goes, he's not playing. Come on now. Steady, lads.
Come on. Listen, this has been an absolute joy. Yeah, we got most of the questions out. We'll cover the rest of them on the weekend update. We'll look ahead to St Mirren on the weekend update as well. And then we'll have the reaction on Saturday. The reaction will be recording in a pub in town straight after the game. And it'll be up and available as soon as possible. This has been an absolute joy as always. Stuart Dugan, a thrill, sir.
It has been a thrill. Thank you very much. And good luck to you all.
Alan Edgar, we'll speak to you very soon.
Pleasure, gents. On a Saturday. See you then.
Lovely stuff. From Stuart Dugan, from Alan Edgar, from myself, Chris Gallagher, this has been The Cynic Weekly, and we'll speak to you down the road.